Ramy, and then my last name's Habib is Habeeb.
Okay, great. Why don't you start by talking a little bit about your background and how you came to where you are today?
Okay, sure. Okay, where do I begin? I studied in university. I studied literature and religious studies, and then afterwards I went to Japan and I lived in Okinawa for 3 years, where I worked on some e-learning platforms and basically using the internet as an education tool for students. This was part of what I was doing there. Afterwards, my father got ill, so I moved back to the Middle East to take care of him. And while in that process of taking care of him, I realized that I was bored and trying to figure out something to do with my time, and also very frustrated just in that whole process that I was looking for something else to do, and I saw. I read an article in which it talked about e-publishing and it talked about out-of-print books. And so I thought to myself, oh, great, I can just create out-of-print books. I can recirculate out-of-print books through e-publishing. And I built a publishing house called Second Chance Publishers, where we approached American publishing houses and said, listen, we'll take your out-of-print books, put them back into circulation as an ebook, and then they never have to go out of print again. Except that business model failed miserably because I was making 3 a.m. phone calls to, California from Bahrain. So it was an extremely painful process. And it was kind of in that process that like I got a business partner and the two of us started working together on it and stuff like that. And we looked around and said, there's no Arabic ebooks, so why are we looking so far away when we could be doing something here? And so that was kind of where Kutub Arabiya was born from, was from this idea that like we could spread Arabic knowledge and information through the internet and basically break down borders.
Can you explain where the name comes from?
Sure, Kutub Arabiya is literally means Arabic books.
That's fairly straightforward.
Right. I mean, we had thought about like so. For example, there's in the Arabic alphabet, there's a letter called Dod, and that has like several transliterated ways, but like one of the most common is DAAD, with a line above the two A's. But anyway, so Dod. And we thought about calling ourselves Harf al-Dod, which means the letter of Dod. The reason why that's significant is because Arabic is the only language that has that sound in it, Daw sound in it. We also thought about calling ourselves Il-Ginnena, which means like it's like the garden of knowledge, or Al-Ezbekeya, which is a place in Egypt which sells secondhand books. That's probably the size of three football fields, so it's a pretty significant marketplace. So, but then in the end, we just said to ourselves, well, wait, no one's ever done Arabic ebooks before, so let's keep it simple and not alienate our market by them trying to figure out what we do.
One of the espoused goals when I go and read about the project is you talk a lot about never being a library at Alexandria again if it gets burned down.
Yeah.
Isn't there a similar danger with electronic transcriptions or representations of books that they may not get burned down, but the format may get burned down essentially?
The format could go become obsolete.
Right.
Absolutely, except that when a format becomes obsolete, the technology that to convert it from the obsolete format to an updated, more relevant format is there. So as long as you're aware of the changes in the markets, you'll be able to keep up with it. And an example of this is when we first launched Kutub Arabiya, we only did PDFs, because PDFs was pretty much the only software display that was reasonably compatible with Arabic. Now we have we created our own form of DRM to display our books, which you can see on our website. And very soon we will be launching an EPUB version, the first Arabic EPUB book that I know of, at least. So we are keeping up to date with the formats, and we are trying to keep the content relevant. And one of the things that my MD does, which is both frustrating and inspirational, is he always tries to figure out how to do it on batch. This seems to be his primary goal in life, is how can we do this on batch? How can we make EPUBs on batch? How can we convert it to our DRM on batch? So.
Well, if you're going to have to keep refreshing the format, you almost have to, because otherwise you'd be chasing your tail forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I totally agree with his philosophy. I just always find it funny when I speak to him, because that seems to be his word. Like in any given conversation with this guy, the word batch comes up 20 times. So it's a joke.
So are you just right now basically keeping everything on hard drive, or what's the backing technologies here?
Okay, well, I mean, we have both a server in the US and a local server which has copies of all our content. And we also do DVD backups of everything that we produce, as well as keeping a hard copy of the book, or a photocopy of a hard copy of the book, in our offices, in case we need to redigitize it.
When you look at, there's been kind of a behind the scenes look at how Google does their digitizing, which is a very automated process as much as they can make it. How much technology have you got in your digitization process?
Okay, well, that's an interesting question. That's a bit difficult to answer directly, so I'll try to just give you an overview. One of the problems with Arabic ebooks is that there is no OCR. Now, Google claims that they have cracked the OCR net. Nut, sorry. And if anyone can do it, it's Google, but I haven't yet actually seen that with my own eyes to see how it works. Part of the reason why we have problems with OCR is because there are thousands of fonts that are usually customized to local publishing houses. It's almost like a signature of that publishing house to create their own font and stuff like that. It's part of the culture of publishing. And also the fact that there are so many dots and lines and other things that an automated OCR system can mistake for a letter or distort into another letter. And to complicate matters even more, because the industry is relatively poor, the quality of paper and the quality of ink used isn't always the highest. So all these factors combined make OCR an extremely difficult endeavor to try to have. So as a result, whenever we take on a book, it either goes through one of two processes. One process is we'll fully type it so that it's fully searchable. We discovered that typing a book with a series of editing is actually cheaper than working with current OCR software that's on the market. And then we'll go through a whole series of, creating the metadata behind it and uploading it to the site and converting it to the two formats that we are currently commercial with. Soon it will be the EPUB will be an additional format, and go on like that. Another thing that we do is we'll scan the pages, and then we'll have people read the pages and pick out keywords so that the books become semi-searchable. What we'll do is we'll do these for most of our books, but if we find that a book is being read over and over again, or that this title has a particular interest, then we'll go back and retype it. It's actually cheaper this way to do it. It's a more sustainable business model to do it this way.
The big thing now in electronic publishing seems to be ebook readers. We have in the US we have the Kindle, we have Barnes and Noble's new one, Sony's got one. There are a million new ones at CES this year. How compatible are they with Arabic literature, and how much literature is available, and what do you think will be available?
Okay, they're not compatible at all. Most of the systems. In fact, the issue is more base than the actual readers, because the issue actually lies in issues with Unicode, and just simply getting Unicode to function and display the characters properly. And to illustrate this, it has taken us, over 3 months to get one EPUB to work, and still that EPUB file still has issues. We're close to getting it completely up and running, but it wasn't an easy endeavor to do. And I mean, compared to it took me from knowing nothing about an hour to make an English EPUB file, you know? So this is quite an endeavor. So the issue becomes EPUB related. Another issue, which I've been speaking with a handful of e-readers, e-reading companies with, one of them is the Bookkeen out of France, is that they're not. I mean, Arabic, you display words from right to left, not left to right, and a lot of them don't have that ready. They don't, you know, a lot of the readers will have menus in which several languages are displayed, but Arabic won't be one of them, so on and so forth. So the issue, yeah, is that right now most e-readers are not compatible with for Arabic. And part of the problem is that companies don't see the Arabic market as a big enough market to really care about. There's not enough e-content out there to really keep it significant, and the Arab, you know, the populations that are buying books are relatively hidden. So people aren't, you know, they're not following the buck, or they are following the buck, and the buck isn't leading them to in the direction of Arabic, which is unfortunate. I don't actually agree with that. I think that it is quite a lucrative market to work with, but this is the perception at least. Does that
Yeah,
answer your question?
sure. Is that also the case for other non-Latin character sets like Mandarin? Are they equally poorly supported, or is Arabic kind of a standout?
I don't know enough about other languages to really tell you. All I can say with all confidence is that English dominates. I'm not sure how it is in China. I mean, just through personal research and reading articles, I know that in Japan, for example, there is quite a big ebook market, kind of for things like manga and stuff like that. But in terms of how e-devices work in other territories, I don't know.
Fair enough. Yeah, you would think Sony probably has good Japanese support.
Yeah, I would hope. And I heard that it's actually kind of a big market, but you know, these are just from random blogs that I've been reading on the net, nothing that is substantial that I would necessarily trust.
Let's turn a little bit to the content of the site. What is all the stuff there right now pretty much stuff in the public domain, or are you working with publishers to get material of current copyright onto the site?
It's 50-50 right now. Our commercial site, which is www.kutubarabiya.com, is 90% within rights, so it's not public domain. However, we do work with collections that we sell to universities and libraries, which aren't as of yet for general public consumption. And they do tend to be public domain books, not all of it, but a lot of it. The issue with public domain versus imprint books in the Middle East is that rights tends to be a bit confusing there because there's not a solid system of rights holding like there is in the West. So what we actually discovered was the best and most efficient way to ensure that when we take the e-rights from a book that is not public domain is to sign directly with the author. And we've had several cases where we've signed with publishing houses only to discover that the publishers never owned the e-rights, nor did the publishers really understand what e-rights were. So we tend to sign directly with authors, which is a real pain for us because we've signed with over 1,300 authors. That's a lot of contracts to keep in mind and follow up with. It would be easier to sign with, 200 publishing houses than 1,300 individuals. But it was the only way to have a to ensure that we were honoring copyright law.
One of the things you make a big point about on the site is that the site is uncensored. You have a whole section that says banned books on it. I isn't that by somewhat by the nature of the Arabic world, isn't that a riskier proposition than it would be, say, publishing banned books in the United States?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It is a risk, and it's a risk that you have a choice when looking at a project like ours. And the choice is, you either do it and bear the risk, or you don't do it and you're happy with the status quo. So we of course have taken legal measures to as best protect ourselves. But our rule of thumb is that just because the book has been censored doesn't mean that it's not valid. And so we do have censored books on our site, but we also do things like, for example, with Egyptian law, as long as your books are oh, sorry, not your books, as long as the content is hosted from a server outside of Egypt, Egypt has no control over that server to ask you to shut it down, for example. So that's why we have a US server.
Do you,
Sorry?
I was going to say, do you have problems with countries trying to either firewall or selectively filter your site?
We haven't yet, to be fair. We've had a few little kind of like questions come our way, but they've mostly gone away. We're lucky because in Egypt they tend to be one of the most liberal countries in terms of censorship in the Middle East. Egypt and I would say Lebanon are probably the two countries that are most free about their censorship laws. Egypt tends to be a post-publication censorship. So a book will get published, and if for whatever reason it catches the public attention of being something that shouldn't be published by the view of the powers that be, they'll have it removed. So we're lucky to be in Egypt for that reason.
Now, as far as the types of books we're looking at, I mean, I have to say I asked around a little bit to kind of get kind of the hot button books. And for example, would you run books by Wafa Sultan, which
Okay.
t tend to be very critical of Islam?
Yes.
That's a clear answer. It's just
But we try to be balanced as
sure.
well, right? And again, like the censorship game is it is a diplomatic game that needs to be played. We won't necessarily publish the book the day after it was published. We might wait a year for the attention on it to die down a little bit. Like it is a game that needs to be played, and we play it to protect ourselves, but ultimately we believe in transparency and we believe in the free dissemination of information, and we believe that information should be equally accessible to those who are interested in it. And we, I mean, but you know, okay, so it, so Kutubaravea is myself and two other business partners, and the but the three of us aren't like these political crusaders who have some agenda in mind, or no, we're just three people who have an appreciation for books, who love books, and who want to share these books with the world. And we took a look at our own market and we said, you know, the only way that we could truly help the Arabic publishing market under current conditions, because of the current lack of distribution infrastructure, is through ebooks. So it's, you know, like when you ask me questions about, I'm always hesitant to come across as someone who has any political agenda.
I think it's not so much, I think the question of that is there's a perception, especially in the West, that almost that Arabic is almost self-censored, to the sense that it, if you look at the body of work, it tend you don't just don't tend to see works which are counterpoints to the established view.
No, absolutely, I agree with that statement that there is a lot of self-censorship. I mean, I have personal experience with that, as well as knowledge of the market that there is a political atmosphere of fear. You know, if I write this down and it gets published and someone reads it, I could go to jail, or I could get in trouble, or I could bring problems to my family. Absolutely, this is a big issue. And then there is also an issue of just lack of understanding the concept of free thought, in the sense of that, you know, all ideas are okay, is not very prevalent there. For example, as I mentioned earlier, we type books, and we had a case where there was one book written by a Muslim author about Egypt in, if I can remember correctly, I believe it was 1968, I think, where he basically was making a writing a book about 1968 and saying that this year was paramount to modern Egypt and in how modern Egypt exists today. And he would list events from this year from the newspapers. And one of the events that he listed was that in this year the an effigy of the Virgin Mary appeared on a few of the Coptic church walls in Zeytun. So, you know, we have these typists who are typing the books from A to Z, and then we have editors who will go after it. And it's common for a typist to miss a line or miss two lines. They're just going so fast, right, that their eyes just skip. But this guy actually missed three pages. And when we look closely at it, it was the three pages talking about the Virgin Mary effigy incident. And so when we questioned this guy about why are these three pages missing, he very innocently looked up at us and said, "Oh, because it's not true. So why write it?"
I see your point. So let's talk a little bit about TOC. The Tools of Change conference is coming up in February. You're going to be keynoting as well as giving a presentation. Can you talk a little bit about why you think TOC is important and what you're looking forward to there?
Okay. TOC is an incredible event for sharing of technologies and for kind of seeing what the modern trends of Arabic, sorry, of publishing is. And one of the things that we're looking at is because the state of distribution in the Arab world is so dismal, we need to look at other forms of distribution. And e-publishing is the way, and it's just a fantastic forum to sit down with people and discuss them. I mean, I was participated in the TOC event in February in Frankfurt, and through this event, I met Neelan Chowski, the head of Stanza, and that was a fantastic eye-opening meeting where we sat and discussed the possibility of having an Arabic catalog on Stanza. It was wonderful to have such support. Another person that I was introduced to through by Andrew Savickas was Lisa Daly, who was really fantastic in helping us figure out some of the issues with the Unicode, and also kind of like understanding that in the Arab market we just don't necessarily have the expertise to deal with some of these problems, so we need to teach ourselves. And so she was quite good at helping us, pointing us in some of the right directions. And just being in an environment where you have people who understand publishing but also understand innovation, it's absolutely inspirational, and it's absolutely paramount for my industry in particular, which suffers from so many particular problems that any kind of innovation or technology that can be of help is always useful. So I'd have to say that I am looking forward to just meeting this body of like people who know what they're talking about. But I'm also very excited for the fact for the opportunity of raising the profile of Arabic publishing, because at the end of the day, we are talking of a market that is over 300 million people, that is a uniform language. Arabic is the same Arabic whether you're it's the same written Arabic whether you're in Morocco, Egypt, or Saudi Arabia. So you have a book in Arabic, you can reach all these markets, including the huge populations of Arabs living in the US, living in Europe and Canada and stuff like that. So it's wonderful to have this opportunity to kind of raise the profile of this market and try to see if there is more interest from US and European companies who might also benefit from working in the region or working with the region.
All right, well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and we look forward to seeing what you have to see at TOC.
Okay, thank you very much.